This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasen with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. In about half an hour, we've got The Breakfast Grill, and this morning I'll be speaking with Antonio Fatas, Professor of Economics at INSEAD, and basically the rise of Bitcoin and talk around Libra, which is Facebook's fiat-backed cryptocurrency, seem to have woken up central bankers to the disruptive potential of digital currencies and the implications on the financial system. So I'll be talking to Antonio for his thoughts on the future of money, central banks, and dependence on the US dollar as really the world's global currency at this point. That's happening in about half an hour after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. Right now, though, we're taking a look at the U.S. Elections on Asia. So the 2020 Democratic National Convention ended last week, and it was an interesting one to say the least, due to the especially on the back of the COVID-19 pandemic. The format was substantially different from previous conventions, as it was done remotely and was highly produced, and it was done at venues across the country. So a very different take on it. And now all eyes are on the Republican National Convention, which is scheduled for this week, expected to renominate President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence.
Yeah, so this year's presidential election is obviously very important given the pandemic and its impact on the economy, and also rising U.S.-China tensions, right? You know, Donald Trump is, you know, a very hawkish on China, Joe Biden as well, but maybe the language should be more polite. So all the U.S.-China tensions have affected ASEAN countries like Malaysia that trade heavily with both countries. So I would really want to know what's the impact of the elections on us.
And for more on that, we speak to Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Aaron, just could you break this down for us? Why is the U.S. election important for Asia?
I think it's important in a few different ways. It's clear that Joe Biden and Donald Trump would take very different approaches to the COVID-19 crisis. Donald Trump really is not taking a very forthright approach to the disease, and it's clear that Joe Biden would take a much more serious approach very early on in his presidency. And I think that would have an effect on the aggregate demand for products from this part of the world and on the health of the global economy in general. It might be more difficult initially, but then it would grow much more quickly. But it's important in a couple other ways as well. As you mentioned, the approach to China is different. Joe Biden's advisors talk about Donald Trump's approach as being confrontational without being competitive. So I think you'd see a much more coordinated approach to China policy from a Joe Biden administration. And then the third way is just, if Americans are able to elect Joe Biden and to repair some of their own democracy, I think you'd be likely to see an approach that then says, we now have some things to say about the health of democracy in other countries around the world. So you might see the United States begin to speak out on human rights and democracy in third countries as well, and in addition to just China, which has really been the focus of the Trump administration.
How might Biden's foreign policies be different in substance? If you could give an example, like especially in the context of the U.S.-China trade tensions.
Sure. I don't think Joe Biden would have started the trade war as we came to know it, as Donald Trump did. I think you would have seen a much more multilateral approach. The United States and Europe actually share a number of concerns on China's trade practices, particularly its theft of intellectual property, but then also the way that it has coerced technology transfer and some of these other things that go against WTO regulations. And so I think you would have seen Joe Biden approach Europe to seek its cooperation in pressuring China to reform some of these practices. Also, its assistance for state-owned enterprises. You know, this was something that the Obama-Biden administration sought to fix in the TPP and was successful in that negotiation. And so you might see a similar approach to China under a Biden administration, but it would not have been the unilateral approach that we saw from the Trump administration.
Do you expect the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, coming back into the agenda?
You know, it's not clear. Joe Biden has said that he wants to see multilateralism return, but he hasn't been clear on the TPP in particular. So we might see something like the TPP, but given that the CPTPP now has become so political in the United States, it might be under a different rubric or under a different name.
Now, given the rise of China, do you think Asian countries will move forward to become more independent, both economically and politically, from the U.S. and perhaps pivot to China? What are your thoughts on that?
But, you know, it's been interesting, this conversation that's been taking place over the past year or so about decoupling, this idea that you can have almost two parallel economies, one that is China-led, one that is US-led. I think, you know, it's clear to those of us who live in this region that that's not really possible. These economies are very integrated. The supply chains are very integrated. But what you might see under either Donald Trump or Joe Biden presidency in different ways is an approach to very specific sectors or specific companies. And in fact, we've seen with the Trump administration sanctions on the XPCC, which is a state-run a production core in Xinjiang province, where the Trump administration has sanctioned that particular company because it uses forced labor of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang province, that now cotton, which comes from Xinjiang, which is largely farmed by that company, is now off limits to people who want to use it in their supply chains and then sell products in the U.S. And so that's creating some difficulties for fast garment manufacturers in Southeast Asia. So you might see an approach to specific sectors, specific companies, where the United States has highlighted human rights abuses or unfair trading practices.
Politically, how best do you think small countries like small ASEAN countries like Singapore and Malaysia, how should we play our cards?
It's probably not for me to advise. There are some very smart people advising both governments. But, you know, the strategy that both countries and Southeast Asia more widely has pursued over the last several decades is, you know, one of non-alignment. You know, my focus is usually on Indonesia, where Muhammad Hatta, Indonesia's first vice president and defense minister, spoke about Mendayung Antara Dua Karang, rowing between two reefs. And I think that Southeast Asia is likely to continue to pursue that sort of strategy, seeking to avoid being crashed on shoals on either side and seeking to avoid too close alignment with China or with the United States in ways that could invite opprobrium from the other capital.
Aaron, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. And that note he ended on there, rowing between two reefs, I think is the most accurate thing that we can say, really, when it comes to small nations and when these elephants fight on the world stage. What can we really do but try and avoid being stepped on?
Yes, yeah. But I do recall Lee Hsien Loong did write an essay, I think, for The Atlantic, where he called on the US, specifically Donald Trump, to tone down on his language. So, it's a question whether Malaysia also want to speak up.
Up next, we'll be speaking to Oi Sun, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, on the latest political happenings in Malaysia. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.